Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Busby Babe podcast. Colin here, joined by Polly Questel. Polly, how's it going?
It's like snap back to reality. The festive season where there's games every day and you don't really have to try hard at work is over, and now it's like, oh, you wake up every day and it's back to your job. We still have games every 2 days, which is a bit of a problem for our squad right now, but we also have to, take our job seriously again.
Yeah, and that kind of came at the same time as another reality check, which was Arsenal beating us 2-0.
Yeah, that one not fun. The chance to go three wins in a row for the first time in 12 months, the chance to get closer to fourth place than we would have been to sixth place. It was all the results going our way earlier in the day. It was so obvious that we were going to lose this game.
Yeah, you tweeted something like everything's going our way. We would only if we had won the game, we would have been 2 points off fourth, so obviously it's setting up for a 2-1 loss.
I was optimistic, apparently, by thinking we would score.
Yeah. And one of the biggest problems in that game, obviously the midfield depleted with Scott McTominay out for maybe a couple months now, and Pogba with yet another ankle injury, supposedly. Although there is some doubt surrounding that from fans on Twitter. But
That's where the smartest fans live. And I spend my whole day there. This might be people, this might be glass houses throwing stones because I spend my whole day on Twitter, but that's where the smartest fans live.
Well, that's where all the fans live, so there's bound to be a few of them that are smart. But so where do you stand on the Pogba thing before we get into the January window?
I believe him. I've always believed him. I've thought he's done nothing wrong. He's acted like a professional this whole time. He made one comment in the summer saying he wanted a new challenge. His agent definitely spoke up, and his agent's been conniving and trying to do some things behind the scene. But that's what Mino Raiola does. He's a guy that tries to make the most money for his players. And, you could say, oh, well, the agent works for him and this is his fault. But, if I were a footballer, I would hire Mino Raiola too, because he makes you a lot of money and you're working in a career where, if you're lucky, after the age of 36, you stop making money. If you're lucky, you make it till 36. So make all the money that you want. I don't blame him for that. He said he wanted a new challenge. He showed up took a plane ride to Australia, was there in the preseason. He accepted this new role where Solskjaer had him playing as the most defensive of all of our midfielders. He accepted that with no problem. You saw him in the preseason taking leadership issues, telling Greenwood and Wan-Bissaka how to play. He got hurt. I didn't think it was a big injury. I thought it was one of those, make sure to limp in front of the cameras so that it's not a big deal when you withdraw from international duty injuries. But he didn't come back right away. He rushed back for Rochdale and Arsenal, which I thought was telling, right? Who rushes back for a League Cup tie against Rochdale if you're still hurt? And he got hurt again, which, maybe that's on Solskjaer for playing him. And it lingered all of, and a lot of the problem was that the club didn't announce anything. And it's not just been with Pogba, it's been with everybody. Martial picked up a little thigh issue where Solskjaer said we hope to have him back after the international break. He was out for 8 weeks. Shaw was out forever. Axel Tonzebi gets hurt in the warm-up to Liverpool. We never got an update until he came back. And it lingered, and the reports came out of France that basically said he lost sensory movement in his ankle or sensory feeling in his ankle, and that's a really big deal. And then there was the things with him in Miami, but he came out and said, my cast is on for another 10 days, and then after that I have 2 weeks of rehab. And 10 days later his cast came on, and 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks he was in Miami because that's where the best doctors are for this. And after 2 weeks he was back with the club. Okay, he then goes to his brother's wedding. What, you think he wasn't going to be allowed to go to his brother's wedding? This wasn't like his best friend, oh, he's my brother. This was his blood brother. And United didn't have a game that day. You think he's not going to be allowed to go to his wedding? And then he gets sick because reports out of France from that said, said that most of the ceremony was outdoors and it was pretty cold out. So yeah, pretty dumb to have an outdoor wedding in the cold, but understandable that he got the sniffles from it. And then he came back, and I don't really believe that this is a new injury. I think it's the same thing. I think, you know, he came, there was a report earlier this week that said he played hurt, but he wanted to rush. He wanted to come back because he wanted to show his commitment. He's tired of the criticism in the media that everybody's giving him that he's not committed. And he came back. He played for 70 minutes in the month of December. He was the best player on the field for each one of those 70 minutes. The 20 minutes that he played with Martial and Rashford in the second half against Newcastle were the best 20 minutes United have looked all season, with the exception of the first 30 minutes against Spurs and City. And apparently he wasn't fully healed, and now he's going to have surgery, and they're saying it's a quick surgery and he's out for a month. I can live with all of that. My one issue is if that, what I just laid out, is true, if the reports that I am choosing to believe are true, why hasn't he just come out and spoken publicly?
Yeah, and I think that's been kind of the biggest concern throughout all of this the last few months, is that he's been kind of on radio silence, which, that's another thing, is when, you know, last season everyone was criticizing him for what he did put on social media, and now that he's choosing not to, you know, we want the information. We want to know what he's thinking. So,
right, and it's not even more like the social media. It's, you know, you can, there is a mix zone after games. You can go and talk to the media after games. It's optional, and nobody ever chooses to do it, but you can. And he could easily go out there and say, I'm just going to make a statement. I'm not taking any questions, and make a statement about this. And then when the media throws a million questions at him about Real Madrid, about his commitment, about all that stuff, you don't have to answer those. But come out and make a statement.
Yeah. And at a time like this, where both him and McTominay are far and away our best midfielders, Fred's kind of stepped up the last couple months, but it's so frustrating that all of that is happening while on the pitch we're looking absolutely terrible in midfield.
Well, it's about who's playing and who we're playing against. You know, I would, you say Fred and Pogba and McTominay are two best midfielders. I would already rank Fred above McTominay, and it's the beauty of, you know, Fred, as I said before, Solskjaer made Pogba play in this, the most defensive position out of all the midfielders. Fred has taken on that role. And when Pogba came back, the reason that they looked so good in those 20 minutes against Newcastle was because Pogba was given that McTominay role, which allowed him some more freedom to get forward. And all of a sudden they looked really good. So I think that it's, they have three really good midfielders. And McTominay, this is what I wrote about this earlier this week when I said, let's have an honest conversation about McTominay. And to sum up that article really quickly, it's basically what it is McTominay is really good at X. He is not as good at Y. And when United need someone who can do X, he's really good. And when United needs someone that can do Y, he's holding them back. And, you know, when we play teams that sit back and sit deep against us, McTominay becomes a bit of a liability because he doesn't move the ball quickly and distribute it that well. And that's where we're missing Pogba. But yeah, he's a much better option. I wouldn't even say, I thought against Arsenal, we badly missed him. He's against Arsenal, he's a much better option than Nemanja Matic by far. But against Burnley, Matic and Fred played really well together and really controlled that midfield.
Yeah. And I would say for the first, I think the first half, that it was when Matic had most of his giveaways in the Arsenal game. And he
kind killed
of
him.
Settled. Yeah, he kind of settled into it a little bit. And he looks fine in possession. Like, he's an experienced player. He's decent on the ball. He just, you know, turns like a cruise ship.
He turns like a cruise ship, but he's also, he killed them because he was playing simple passes. And, you know, Rio Ferdinand pointed it out too. And this is what my next is going to be about, is how many times, you know, especially when you're playing on the counterattack, and this is what McTominay and the rest of United were so good at against City, was they won the ball back and they got rid of it right away. You make that first pass, and how many times did Matic, even when he didn't give the ball away, just didn't, you know, Rashford, James, they made a run, and Matic just didn't make that pass. He just held it and all of a sudden Arsenal reformed, and there you go. So it was like, I thought it was an interesting game where it was like Arsenal were open to be sat on the break. They weren't sitting back, but at the same time, they also were parking the bus because United, just mainly Matic, gave them the time to get back. And that killed them. That, you know, that just killed everything about the game for United.
And especially considering how many times Arsenal themselves gave the ball away, there should have been so many opportunities for goals that just the midfield, which was with McTominay and Pogba and Fred, and ideally, you know, distributes the ball quickly to the front line. But now there's the opportunities are so few and far between that it isolates them. It isolates right. The front three.
Exactly. And Arsenal did not play that well. Their two goals, the first goal had about 17 defensive breakdowns, and Arsenal did a really good job of forcing those defensive breakdowns, the way that Kolasinac kind of like for lack of a better word, he underlapped Aubameyang. Aubameyang kind of stayed wide, and Kolasinac came more interior and caused the breakdown of sorts. Pepe had a great dummy run to lose Luke Shaw, but ultimately, that goal, Kolasinac fired it back off the middle, and it ricocheted off Victor Lindelof's foot, and Pepe smashed it in. And then the second one, De Gea makes a save that hits Lindelof in the back, and Socrates blasts it into the net. So it's just bad bounces a couple of times. Granted, there were a lot of defensive breakdowns, and Victor Lindelof has been the victim of a lot of bad bounces in the last 3 weeks that you – as much as I try to defend him, you got to start to wonder, like, maybe there's a reason that these bad bounces keep happening to Lindelof and not anybody else.
Yeah. And I think strength in general in defense has been kind of a problem for Victor Lindelof. He's lost a lot of, you know, physical battles, and on set pieces, United's defense in general has just not been good.
It's been worse than that.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay a little bit positive here.
Right. So, well, positive is they give up the fewest chances in the league. They give up poor quality chances. So, like, the defense is doing something right. It's just they give up one or two good chances a game, and the opposition finishes those one or two chances every game, partially because their set-piece defending is so awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as bad as we've looked at times, and when opposition gets a really good chance, often it looks like our defense is just scrambling, and they look hectic and confused and maybe out of sorts with each other. I think playing more games together will help a back four unit, obviously, and maybe it just needs time. But I'm not ready to give up on the Lindelof-McGuire partnership just yet, but I'm starting to see some of the cracks in it.
Yeah, it's more defensive. The cracks are more defensive. The reason for the Lindelof McGuire partnership is because of what Lindelof brings to the attack and going forward. He's better than Tuanzebe at that. You can't really bring Rojo in. The issue is basically Luke Shaw at left back. One of the reasons they don't give up that many chances is because they defend higher up the field, and they're really good at that. The team stays really, really organized and doesn't really let you get down near the goal. Once you do get down near our goal, I mean, then it looks like there's Juan Bissaka, who's still really good, and it looks like three people like chickens without heads. You know, someone's always lost, someone's always on the wrong spot, someone's always diving to recover, and that's why, you know, the rare times that teams do get near United's goal, they score on them.
Yeah. And I think this may transition well into the main topic of this podcast episode, which is the January transfer window, and first off, Manchester United's positional needs. We brought in a center back, and we brought in a right back, addressing two of our biggest needs, but left back is still a bit of a problem. But we were talking before the podcast that's something that we can maybe put off until the summer, or even, you know, Brandon Williams looks pretty good, maybe give him more of a chance instead of Luke Shaw.
For sure. I remember people screaming about this last summer that, you know, we need a left back, and United, it's criminal that to not sign a left back. And when you look at the way that this team was moving in the transfer market, which was at a snail's pace, one player at a time, you had to say, all right, yes, I think we need a new left back, but I don't think we can make that a priority. I think if you look at it, Luke Shaw and as is okay back there, and Ashley Young as the backup left back is a adequate backup. And, you know, to go into the season with those two is not the best, but it's certainly not the worst. It's okay. And the emergence of Brandon Williams has made it better. So I don't know if you need to sign a new left back, but you certainly need to give Williams more chances. And that's going to happen now. I think Williams is going to come into the team against Wolves. Solskjaer has at no point this year played any of the teenagers in back-to-back games when there's a midweek game involved. So he's never started somebody midweek and then weekend, or weekend and then midweek. And everybody keeps screaming, we want to develop the kids, develop the kids. That's part of developing the kids, is not throwing them in there to the fire. They're 18 years old. They've never played a full season at this level. If we certainly, yeah, sure, like he could have played on Wednesday and played again on Saturday. But if you do that, especially early in the season, they'll burn out by the time you need them late in the season. So I think he's done a very good job of keeping Greenwood and Williams fresh, and he's going to give them more run in the second half of the season, and we're going to see more of them. The question is, can Williams be a starting left back? Can he be your first choice left back? I think if you go, I don't think anybody's coming to sign Luke Shaw. So I think as much as we may want to get rid of him, he's going to be here next year. Can he be the Ashley Young? Can Brandon Williams be the first choice guy next year and Luke Shaw be the Ashley Young? That's on Williams to go out there and take that spot.
Yeah, and I think Ashley Young's age obviously is becoming more of a thing. He's nowhere near as fast as he used to be, but he's been a serviceable left back and a somewhat less serviceable right back the past two seasons.
Defensively, he's a totally fine left back. He gets into trouble when, you know, he tries to get forward, and certainly when he's the right back, he gets invited forward because teams leave him open. Mm-hmm. As a left back, you know, he's a natural winger, broke into his career on the left wing. You know, he wants to get forward, and that's when he could get caught out. But when he plays in a much more defensive role, he's very good at it. And, you know, the last time that he played a full season as a left back, he ended up going to the World Cup and starting for England.
Yeah. And I think he made the World Cup team of the tournament, too, at left back.
That had to be because of his set-piece delivery.
And not his crossing delivery. So, moving forward up the pitch to probably the most pressing position, which is central midfield. And we've come up with a few targets that we've been linked with. Do you want to go ahead and start on some of those?
Well, do we want to do our list of was both attacking and in central midfield. In central midfield, the names that we've been linked with were Emre Can and Sean Longstaff. And what do you think about that?
Longstaff was someone we were linked with in the summer, so I did a little bit of research on him back then. He had a much more impressive breakout season than he has had the rest of the 2019 calendar year. And Manchester United fans will probably be thinking more about Matty Longstaff based on how he's played against us. But Sean Longstaff seems like another one of those kind of similar to McTominay up-and-coming midfielders. It's kind of hard to judge right now what his trajectory is, but he's definitely got talent, and he's got a bit of Premier League experience already, which is better than most of our options right now. So
that was no one's endorsing Sean Longstaff right now, and probably I'm the only one that was going to, and that was like the weirdest endorsement I've ever heard about.
I mean, he's played in the Premier League 12 months, so right. and that's more than James Garner or Dylan Levitt have. So
right, there's two things that United need here. One is they need bodies.
Yeah.
Well, we have Nemanja Matic and Fred right now, and Matic is barely even, you know, is someone that you don't want to consider. When Pereira was dropped back in the midfield, we saw how much of a disaster that was.
Yeah,
and you're looking to replace McTominay right now. Longstaff, like you said, was very good last year, or had a much better breakout year than he has the rest of this calendar year. He was very good last year, and then he got hurt. Newcastle switched managers. So, like, he went from playing under Rafa Benitez, who is a Champions League winning manager, and, you know, a lot of people around the world speak very highly about Benitez and what he can do for players, to playing for Steve Bruce, who plays this ultra-conservative, you know, sit back in this 5-4-1 block. It's very simple. You know, you don't get a lot of responsibilities to show what you could do. And, you know, it might not be the system for him. So, like, let's think about it that way. Is it possible that Sean Longstaff's game was better suited for one manager rather than another? Like, he's not the first person that's ever happened to. So that is totally a possibility, is that, okay, his game doesn't suit Steve Bruce, and it's hard to judge him playing in this Newcastle side. But like you said, he's got experience, and United need bodies. And he's 22 years old. What we've seen this year is, last year when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took the job, the first thing he did was drop Scott McTominay back down. He dropped him from the matchday squad. Within a few weeks, he had dropped him back to the U23s. He only called him back up when United had nobody to play in the second leg against Paris. And then, you know, they were just dealing with injuries the rest of the season. McTominay was pretty bad last year. And this year, he's become indispensable. And that's happened under Solskjaer. Fred was a bust last year, and this year he's become our best midfielder. That's happened under Solskjaer, and Carrick, and McKenna. And this year, Marcus Rashford is having his best year of his career. Anthony Martial is having the best year of his career. You know, it can't be a coincidence that all of a sudden all these players have improved. When Solskjaer took over the team, and everybody thought Nemanja Matic's days were done, he actually had a revival of form for a few weeks. So who's to say that Sean Longstaff wouldn't come into this team, work with United's coaches, and all of a sudden develop?
Yeah, and I think he would definitely play a more comfortable position in one of those pivot roles in the deeper part of midfield. And I'm not so sure Newcastle may be willing to sell midseason, but they're probably more willing to sell than some of these other guys we're looking at.
I think they would be because, first of all, there's the emergence of Matty Longstaff, who, if you have watched any Newcastle matches, you would be not impressed at all with Matty Longstaff. If you watch their two matches against Manchester United, then you know how to feel about him, or how we feel about him. I think if United came and offered the $50 million that Newcastle wanted for Longstaff, they'd let him go in a heartbeat. But the thing is, Sean Longstaff isn't signing a new contract, so hopefully United can lower that price a bit, because I would not pay $50 million for him. I don't think he's worth that much, even if you're paying for potential. But I also think if you brought him in at $50 million, the price tag expectations would weigh him down, and he'd never have a chance to succeed. But I think that they would be open to selling him.
Yeah, and we're also not a club that just throws $50 million around that often anymore. So maybe even convincing Woodward to do that. I mean,
excuse me. 2/3 of their transfers this summer were $50 million.
Yeah, but that was extensive. Yeah, you know what? You're right. This is someone Solskjaer has been looking at for a while. They might actually do that. So the other option that we talked about in holding midfield would be Emre Can, who I actually haven't watched in a couple of years since he was at Liverpool. But it seems like things have not been going well at Juventus for him.
Yeah, he played a bit last year. And this year, this came out in The Athletic yesterday. I read it this morning, that as soon as Maurizio Sarri came into Juventus, Emre Can knew his days were done, and he knew he wasn't going to get any playing time, and he had to get out. Mm-hmm. He is a passer. He does things pretty well. He does other things not so well. He seems to be like a Nemanja Matic with more upside, but Juventus are looking right now for a loan. A loan with an option to buy. So it could be a 6-month loan with an option to buy. And if that's the case, why wouldn't you take him? Because again, United need bodies, and you know, maybe he's not more mobile than Nemanja Matic, and then what good does he do? Probably nothing. He makes a lot of lateral passes. That's the big concern, because United do not need that. They need more forward passes. But I also read a report this morning about a potential swap for Matic. I don't know why Juventus would want Matic, but I don't see that happening. But if that was an offer, I would, you know, do that. Emre Can has less miles on his legs. He's younger. So, yeah, even if you're swapping like for like, it's a better deal, because maybe he can develop that forward passing. He's 25. The odds of him doing that are not high, but you never know. But even if it's just a loan to buy option, United need bodies.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if the statistics actually support this, but he seems like he's got at least more offensive awareness than Nemanja Matic does.
Right. I read that. I looked at it yesterday too, and I kept looking at it, and I was just like, it seems like, especially his last season at Liverpool, he was getting passes into the final third with regularity. Mm-hmm. The numbers don't lie to me, but like, it seems like it is, but like, we're still not too sure of it. And he hasn't been doing it for the last 2 years, although he's been playing further out wide with Juventus than he was playing with Liverpool.
Yeah. And of course, any opportunity with a loan with an option to buy just seems like a very safe bet at this point, trying to bring in bodies for this midfield.
Right, and I get Solskjaer saying, you know, he doesn't want to do something that's just going to be short-term. He wants everything to be building, but sometimes short-term helps, you know.
And sometimes short-term can save your job.
Right, and sometimes you just need it. You know, think back to 06-07 when United's strike force was the always injured Luis Saha and Wayne Rooney. And, you know, they got the 10-week loan of Henrik Larsson, who was vital for them. But, you know, it took away minutes from Rooney and Larsson, from Rooney and Saha. So it helped everybody play less minutes, and he scored some vital goals. He scored 3 goals all year. If you listen to everybody talk about how they'll talk about how vital he was, he scored 3 goals. It's just that each one of them was pretty vital. But short term can really help you.
Yeah, and I think there was talk on Slack of yesterday about the idea that you had for Christian Eriksen. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, this was my most out of the box idea ever. It made sense in my, it didn't even make sense in my brain, and it's going to make even less sense as I say it out loud. So any positive opinions anybody has of me while they're listening are about to go out the window. But basically I said, if Christian Eriksen signs a pre-contract agreement with any club outside of the Premier League, is it legal for Tottenham to then send him on loan somewhere else? Odds are it's probably not. We can't imagine. Everybody in the Slack channel is pretty on base with this. We can't imagine that it is legal, but in theory, a pre-contract agreement is just if he signs a pre-contract agreement with Real Madrid, it basically says my contract with Spurs ends on June 30th, and on July 1st, I'm going to sign this contract with you. So therefore, Spurs still own him until June 30th and can loan him out in theory. Could United get him on loan? Because I would not spend money to sign Christian Eriksen. I would not sign Christian Eriksen long term. I think he's at the end of his prime, and you know what we're seeing of him this year isn't so much because he's been in and out of the team. It's because this is what he's kind of becoming now. But I think he could help us this year, and he'd be a very good move for 6 months. Would Solskjaer want a player that, you know, doesn't want to be here? We're not his first choice. Well, he can help us, and he does want to play himself into shape for the Euros. Would Daniel Levy like allow him to go on loan and not get a fee for him? Well, if Eriksen signs a pre-contract agreement, Levy's not getting a fee anyway. So even if you paid a small loan fee, that's more money than Tottenham would have gotten anyway. So why not do it? Would Mourinho allow him to go to one of his rivals? Probably not, unless Mourinho's going to, you know, do a Pochettino, for lack of a better word, and basically say, well, you're not invested in the squad anymore, so I'm not going to play you. If that's the case, then yeah, get him out of the room, Let him go to United. And he can help us. This, you know, obviously I don't think this is legal, and if it was legal, I would give it like a 0.1% chance of ever happening. But in my brain, it made sense.
Yeah, he's had a pretty tricky past 6 months at Tottenham. It's kind of been all speculation what they would do. And there were rumors that we were trying to get him in August, but that he had spoken against that potential move. He would rather, you know, play out his last year at Spurs and then leave for free next summer to somewhere else. But
his dream is to play for Real, and Real just didn't come for him. So it backs him into a weird spot where it's just now, where do you want to go? Because he wasn't, I want to leave Tottenham. He was, I want to go to Real Madrid. And when United came calling, he was like, no, it's I want to go to Real Madrid. So what do you do next year if they don't come calling?
Yeah. And, of course, there's been a dip in his form over the past year, maybe even last season a little bit. And I think it was on the Guardian Football Weekly that somebody was talking about this, but that sort of number 10 attacking midfielder that Christian Eriksen is kind of going out of style now?
A bit, but Mourinho's been playing him deeper, interestingly. And didn't did he hit a free kick the other day?
He did.
Scored on one? Yeah, so like he can still do that, and United need that, because Rashford's getting better at them, but they need someone to actually put the ball in the net. They get a lot of fouls.
They probably need someone for the free kicks that are closer to the box as well, because Rashford's all about the power. He needs a little bit of space, I think.
He's getting better. He's really put a lot of them where they need to be in recent. Ever since that free kick against Chelsea, he's basically, he didn't do it against Arsenal, but you give him one or two a game, he's putting them on target. So sooner or later, he's going to stop shooting them straight at the goalie, and they're going to start going in.
Yeah, they're at least more on target than Fred's free kicks.
He's got Fred had one really good one, and as the leader of the Fred Hive, I was like, yes, he's got the left foot, we should let him, and he has not done anything since then.
So I guess kind of transitioning into talking about that more forward midfield role, and Ollie hasn't, you know, changed up formations really in terms of the midfield at least, so it seems like he's set on having the two in behind and then the number 10 that kind of feeds off of the front three. Jesse Lingard has not been up for the challenge. Neither really has Andres Pereira. Both have problems passing and giving the ball away.
They have problems with, like, being on the field.
Yeah.
No, that's the one thing they don't have a problem with. They never get hurt. They have problems with everything that involves playing the game.
Yeah. So we've been linked with a few names for that as well. Gedson Fernandez out of Benfica, a possible loan and then option to buy deal because he's been a little bit out of favor there. He's 20 years old, and he's rated 76 on FIFA, and that's about the extent of my knowledge about him.
Yeah, he came out of nowhere, and in theory, it's not a bad deal. It's not a deal that, you know, helps you this year. Like, if you needed to make three transfers and you were going to make Gedson Fernandez as one of the transfers, you would need to make three plus Gedson Fernandez. You know, it's the same way we signed that 16-year-old like last summer that we forgot to talk about. That's just in addition to it. It wouldn't be a terrible idea, but ultimately, this morning I saw him. You know, it came out of nowhere, and then this morning I saw, I think Sky tweeted that like he was close to joining West Ham, which just means that his agent threw out Arsenal and Manchester United as interest in order to drum up interest and drum up a price and drum up a deal. We probably never informed. We probably know about him, but we're not in for him. Although it would be typical of like all of the fans to be calling for Bruno Fernandez, and Ed Woodward comes back with like the CVS brand version of him.
Yeah. So speaking of Bruno Fernandez, we haven't been linked with him recently, have we? Was that another, did he sign a new contract at Sporting?
He did. He still wants, I think he did. I think he obviously still wants to leave. But the new contract was mainly, you know, to protect Sporting so that they could still get a a fee for him. The reason that we haven't been linked with him recently is because it all came from his camp. You know, I don't think United was ever really in for him. And you could tell that when the agents start throwing Manchester United out, and then all of a sudden it's, oh no, Tottenham are about to close in on a deal with him. And, you know, there's always someone else. That's always the agent just trying to drum up interest in their client, drive up the value. You know, when FIFA deregulated agents, like, we went from having 100 guys in the industry to now having over 1,000. And owners, chairmen have talked about it, that they get messages from people all the time claiming to represent players that they don't even know who to respond to. Because no one knows who your agent. You know, Mino Raiola is not technically Erling Haaland's agent. His father is. But somehow Mino Raiola is involved in that deal. At least Mino Raiola is like a recognized agent. But with all these people, like, oh, it's their dad, it's their cousin, it's this guy. You know, a lot of people don't know where it is. And that's basically, you know, Ander Herrera had that same problem. That's basically where we were with Bruno Fernandes. I think it was just his agent was just drumming him up, trying to just get him a move. And they haven't been doing that recently, which is why we haven't been linked to him.
Yeah.
Well, so if we were working something out, the last thing we would do is let it slip to the media. Because then you lose your leverage.
Yeah, slipping things to the media is what Edward Woodward does when he wants to create a distraction.
Right. This is why I keep laughing at fans who are like crying about this. You know, when we, you know, the next person that will, or one of the next few people that we'll talk about, Jack Grealish, where it's like, wait, who, why are, we haven't been looking at him at all recently. Why are we just linked with him now? And it's like, no, like, we've definitely been looking at him. The club even bragged about how, or a few months ago, we bragged about how we hired some scouting analytics service and that we look at hundreds and thousands of players every year. Like, yeah, duh, so does every club. But there's a reason that you don't leak into the media like, hey, here are the 1,000 players that we're scouting. You know, you lose your leverage. So All of a sudden you get linked to Jack Grealish. It's not like, oh, Jack Grealish played well against Arsenal last week. Suddenly we're interested in him. It's no, we've been watching him for quite some time.
Yeah, one thing that kind of helped push that narrative a little bit was when he did some interview and he was asked what his favorite goal he scored was, and he said it was the one against us for its quality, but also because he said Old Trafford was his favorite ground to play at.
Yeah, he sent a tweet a few years ago about United in the Champions League, like back when he was like a teenager, when Twitter was in his infancy. I forgot what it was about, but I remember seeing it pop up a few weeks ago. But they keep saying he's a boyhood Aston Villa fan, and, like, you know, obviously he came through their academy, but I think, you know, he's one of those guys where, oh, I support Aston Villa, but I also, you know, support Manchester United.
Yeah, and there's been talk about what maybe a release clause being a part of his contract. And if he is a January target for us, that would almost have to be the case, because otherwise I don't really see Villa letting someone go unless they know they're going to be relegated.
Right. There's no chance. But even if they knew they were going to be relegated, you hold on to him and you do it in the summer, because they just got hit with two big injuries. You cannot sit there and tell your fans we have two big injuries, which means it's going to be a challenge and a half for us to stay up in the league this year. And, oh, by the way, we're selling our best player. You can't do that. There's, you know, that's the other thing. And this is something that I wrote about that got published this morning, was we all say that we need things in January. And when Solskjaer comes out and says we're going to go after the right people if the right people become available, and everybody turns around and says, oh, he's already making excuses. It's the right people don't become available in January. You know, teams don't let their best players leave in January. And there is just zero chance that Jack Grealish is available to be sold. Well, Villa would willingly sell Grealish in January. There are reports of said release clause in this contract, but, you know, release clause rules in the UK are different from what they are in Spain. We'd have to see what the wording is. Our editor Brent is just like, it would have to be an ironclad release clause. Luis Suarez had a release clause that Arsenal triggered, and somehow he didn't get sold to Arsenal. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that would have to go into it. Someone on Twitter sent me a thing. I don't know if this is true or not. I didn't do any research about it, but he said when it comes to a release clause, the money has to be paid up front, which makes sense. And United already paid the Maguire money up front. Usually a lot of transfers these days get paid in installments. The Maguire money was $80 million up front, so that's gone. Bookkeeping wise, we are sitting on $80 million of Lukaku money, but also bookkeeping wise, to be spending $65 million plus the $80 million, which $145 million of upfront payments just this year, that's a little dicey.
Yeah, and our executives are kind of stingy as it is when it comes to transfers. And I think the only reason we made a big move that we did a couple of years ago to get Alexis Sanchez was because it was a swap deal. And there wasn't a whole lot of money involved other than his wages, obviously.
There was a lot of – they hid that really well. There was a lot of money involved in that. There was Alexis's wages, the bonuses that were paid. I mean, luckily he didn't achieve most of those bonuses, but yeah. There was a massive, massive sign-on fee that basically went to Alexis. They basically – what would have been a regular transfer fee for him was basically paid out to Alexis and his agents, and they paid a lot of money for Alexis. Mm-hmm.
I think it was his contract for that first year alone was worth over £30 million, I think.
Yeah, they paid up the wazoo for Alexis, which is, again, and I mean, you say it too, like the owners are stingy. They're not. They've spent £700 million something pounds in the last 6 years. Yeah, they were stingy when Ferguson was there, but. Let me pull it up right here. Let me find it. Since 2014-15, they've spent £622 million. That doesn't even factor in what they spent on Alexis. They have a net spend of £455. The last 2 years have been stingy because of the fact that when Mourinho was in town, they spent up the wazoo and they didn't bring anything in. And in order to not get into hot water with FFP laws, you can't with that huge wage bill that they had, they really didn't have. People out of their academy and bring some money in there. They still spend more, but they also violated the rules and were under investigation. Chelsea sell a lot out of their academy, so their net spend is actually relatively low. The question is, now that City violated those laws and were investigated, and basically the punishment was don't do it again.
Yeah.
Now everybody's kind of saying FFP is going to go away. So now what's your, like, you know, I understand why it hasn't happened in the last 2 years, but if nobody's going to follow these laws anymore, you better not either.
Yeah, I think that was my thing with City's situation, because this was the second time that it happened to them where they were threatened with a European ban, but instead they got out of financial fair play issues with spending money because they spent money and paid UEFA. You know, they paid a fine for the second time in a row.
And we had emails of Gianni Infantino helping them circumvent these rules.
Yeah.
But we also, you know, they have the backing of like an Arab oil state. You know, they literally have, I'm not going to say unlimited backing or unlimited funds, but it's close to it. They have more money than you and I can count to. And the Glazers just have a lot of money. But their money probably is in the billions, which is a word that you and I are very familiar with. What City have is probably a word that we, you know, it could be like, you know, maybe it's trillions, maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's a word that, like, you know, we're just not familiar with. That's how much money they have. So it's still not an easy comparison because City don't care what they, you know, for them, this is just a plaything. They can lose £700 million a year because that's toilet paper money for them versus the Glazers, which is an investment and they're trying to make money off of it. And it sucks for us as fans, because it's really annoying and we do have the backing. And yes, like instead of taking £16 million profits per child, like what if you just took £7 million profits per child this year and actually spent that money on the team? you'd still make some money, and that would be better for us as fans. But, ultimately, it's two different owners with two different ways of looking at this.
And the way that we've done it is bring in three or four players a summer, whereas they can afford to go out and do 10 at a time and just stack a squad.
That's Ed Woodward. He can't do it. That's ultimately the problem with this team is it's not that I don't think the Glazers are cheap. I just think that they have a guy in charge who doesn't know what he's doing. He remains in charge because he makes them a lot of money. And that's what can't, this team also owns the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have been terrible for like 7 years, and they haven't fired their GM. So that just shows you, like, these guys have loyalty to their guys, but also Ed Woodward makes them money, and that's what they ultimately care about. And as much as it sucks, and we could sit here and scream Woodward out and Glazers out, they're not going to sell the team if only they would just start caring about the football side of things and say, hey, Ed, you got to hire a director of football.
Well, I think we had one more midfield candidate that we were going to talk about, but this would actually be another big money move. Do you think that Woodward would commit to that sort of move in January?
Yeah, I don't think that Woodward is shy about spending money. I mean, remember when Ferguson left, the knock on Woodward wasn't that he wouldn't spend money. It was that he kept getting played by people. Sergio Ramos, Toni Kroos, those guys played him for new contracts. Tottenham accepted a world record bid for Gareth Bale. Bale just chose to go to Real Madrid. And then, he paid more than the release clause for Fellaini. He paid more than like the going rate for Morgan Schneiderlin. He paid more than the going rate for Bastian Schweinsteiger. He paid about twice as much as anybody was offering for Victor Lindelof. So in the early Woodward years, it was about, my joke would be like if Woodward walked into a store and ordered a Coke and they said $2, he'd give them seven. It had nothing to do with him not spending money. It's just he spends that money stupidly. You have Louis van Gaal. Why are you bringing in Angel Di Maria, who doesn't fit his style? And yeah, now he works just so slowly. And like maybe he's getting the right players. The three players that you signed last year, none of them are busts. But why does it take so long? When you come out here and say, "Hey, it's when you give that interview and say it's not easy to bring six or seven players in during a window." Well, last year, the season ended on like May 11th or something, and on May 14th, Dortmund announced like five signings.
And deals that they had been working on the entire season as
Right,
well.
exactly. You can agree to a deal in February and not announce it until May. Like that, I mean, it's not legal, but it's basically legal now because everybody does it. As long as the paperwork doesn't be processed. When was the Erling Haaland deal announced? December 29th. And they said, oh, and the paperwork's just dated January 2nd. Done.
So, going into this last one, which is Kai Havertz out of Bayer Leverkusen, a team in Germany kind of struggling, so they may be willing to part ways with their young talent for a lot of money. But someone who is also linked to Manchester City, Liverpool, and Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich being the big one because they buy all the young German talent.
Right, and he's having a bit of a down year, so people are already like wary about him. But again, just having a down, they also lost their other creative options. They lost, was it someone went to Dortmund? I forget his
Yeah,
name.
Julian Brandt.
Oh yeah, I was thinking Draxler, but yeah, Julian Brandt went to Dortmund. So all of a sudden, the onus came onto him, which is, one of those situations where I used to be really good when teams were paying attention to the other guy. Put him in a situation now where you have another guy, and he'll be good again. Or that's the hope. You have to compete with Bayern Munich because Bayern Munich basically are, they like everybody that's young in Germany and coming out of Germany. And they basically have the financial clout that Premier League teams, that United, Chelsea, and Arsenal had 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if United decided they wanted James Maddison, they'd call up Leicester and they'd offer him $15 million, whether it was January or not. $15 million is a lot of money to a club like Leicester 10, 15 years ago. It's, you know, helps them run the club. Mm-hmm. And Maddison is at Old Trafford. The Premier League TV deals have made every single Premier League club financially solvent and stable. So nobody is offering money, life-changing money to a team. They're just going to be like, you know, it's Harry Maguire. We don't need to sell him, but if you give us this outrageous fee, we'll sell him to you. And so they can't just call up, you know, the Leicesters and the Aston Villas and say, hey, here's a lot of money, give us your best player anymore, because they have the ability now to say no. Teams in Germany don't really have that ability just yet. If Bayern Munich called up Bayer Leverkusen and offered them 45 million euros for Havertz, they'd accept it. But it'll cost the money because the demand is there.
Yeah, there was, I think August, the price that they set was somewhere around 90 to 100, which seems pretty ridiculous for a between German clubs transaction. Although there is a bit more American money going in now with the Fox Sports deal. Bundesliga is more accessible than it used to be 5 years ago to TV audiences. So maybe that's finally having an effect. But
they have a much better TV deal, but it's not.
Yeah. It's nowhere near the Premier League.
Yeah, it's not close to the Premier League. I don't even think it's close to Spain. But they have a much better one, and they're striking, and their next one is going to be even better again.
Yeah. And Kai Havertz is, from what I've seen of him, he's the kind of, you know, he can find the final pass through, and he's a pretty quick attacking midfielder. He's the kind of player that would fit right into what Ollie wants as a number 10. But do you think that he would maybe want to force a move to a team like United when he knows that the cities and Bayern Munich are calling as well?
Well, that's where you got to do a sales job, because who is sitting at Bayern Munich in your way? If you go to Bayern Munich, you have to compete with the Coutinhos and Serge Gnabry, Ivan Perisic, Thomas Müller, Kingsley Coman. Mm-hmm. You know, you got, even there, he's not playing much. You go to City, Raheem Sterling's there, De Bruyne's there, David Silva's there, Bernardo Silva's there, Riyad Mahrez is there. They keep Phil Foden around as like a community service kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you got to compete with all of them versus you're a 20-year-old and you've got a chance to step into this team, which is not far off. They're fifth in the Premier League. They're a few pieces away, and then they just need depth. And you get to play with these 20-year-old strikers who are dynamic and young. You get a young team around. They're heavily linked with Jadon Sancho too, so you'll get another young dynamic player. You got Paul Pogba behind you, and you've got a chance to be part of the resurgence of this club. And that's the sales job you got to get. Is remember, if you go to City or Bayern, if you go to Bayern and you don't win the Champions League, no one's going to remember you. If you go to City right now, you're just another player that went to City and won the league, and won the FA Cup, and won the League Cup, and until you win the Champions League, also no one's going to remember you. You go to Manchester United, and you're part of a squad that gets back to the top, you're going to be remembered again. Because, you know, United, they have that history. Bayern has history too, but in this era of Bayern Munich, the Bundesliga is like a formality for them. So, yes, you'd win Bundesliga plates. I don't want to call it a trophy because it's a big shield. And I forgot the name of it off the top of my head. But you could sell them on – you're a 20-year-old and you'd have a chance to come to the biggest club in England and develop and thrive. And you point out, like, you know, look at Rashford having his best season. Look at Martial having his best season. Look at McTominay, who was not good last year. He's playing great this year. Look at Fred, who, you know, look at how he's developed this year. You do that and you say, you come here and you just got to be a little bit better than Andreas Pereira and we're in the top four.
Which hopefully is doable for most midfielders that would come in. But and even I know there's so much doubt about his future with the club, but pairing a creative midfielder with that sort of potential with somebody like Paul Pogba, who will hopefully be healthy and have playing time the rest of the season, I mean, that's what every United fan has wanted for since Pogba came here, is that creative midfielder to partner him with.
Exactly. Or allow him to go be more creative, like, and this has been the best part about the reemergence of Fred is if you play a team that's sitting back and you have Pogba on the field, I actually think Andreas Pereira can be like competent if Pogba's playing in that number eight role where he's free to get forward and teams have to worry about him because they don't worry about McTominay when he gets forward, and that forces them, to they can match up evenly against the front three and Pereira. But if you have to worry about Pogba now getting forward, it'll give Pereira just that much more space, which he's shown when he has the space, he can be effective at it. He had good games against Norwich and Brighton. He had another one recently. So you have that option with Pogba, and I think in games like against Arsenal, where you could play McTominay and Fred, and then Pogba just further up the field in general, he'd be very dangerous. But yeah, to pair him with like someone who is clearly more talented than Andreas Pereira would be dynamite for this club.
So, Polly, I guess we'll kind of close things up with this question. When Matt and I do it, we do a Fergie time question at the end of the podcast.
It's a good name.
Yeah. Do you think we actually sign anyone in January?
Yes, because they have to. They have nobody to play.
Because I thought the same thing last year. I thought surely we have to
No,
bring in a midfielder.
well, last year they were very clear. They said we're not doing anything because Solskjaer's not our manager yet, so why bring some? It was actually a smart move last year to say why bring somebody in if we may hire a guy who this guy doesn't fit. Like if we go and bring in a Sean Longstaff, who's to say that the guy we hire when if we don't choose Solskjaer is gonna Sean Longstaff's game is going to fit him? There is a name that came up like 2 hours ago that I think would be intriguing, and that would be Danny Drinkwater on loan.
Wow.
Burnley have just sent him back to Chelsea because he didn't catch on at Burnley, which is not a surprise because he doesn't fit their style at all. And again, United need bodies. Chelsea don't need him. Chelsea don't want him. United need bodies. He's a better passer than McTominay. He played that box-to-box role next to Conte. You just need, he just needs to be more mobile than Nemanja Matic.
And not give the ball away as much.
Right, but like I think he wouldn't give the ball away because he's a good passer. That's really the strength of his game. I mean, really, right now, the two positions that United need, the bar is so low. It's you just have to be a little bit better than Matic, and you just have to be a little bit better than Pereira. So why and call up Chelsea and do a loan for Drinkwater because they don't value him at all. So if they don't rate him, what's the problem with sending him? If we think that guy stinks, why wouldn't we send him to the team that's right behind us and trying to chase us down? If they play him and he's as bad as we think he is, he'll make them worse. You gotta do something.
It's just,
Take a
it's
chance.
making me so sad that we're in this position.
That's the problem is you
That
say
you
things like
can make
this.
the case that Danny Drinkwater is would actually be an improvement, because he would over Nemanja Matic.
So like, that's the thing is you say things like this and the reaction that people give you is I can't believe that this is how we're thinking. Look at how much we're falling. And it's okay, like stop lamenting on the past because no matter what, you can't change the fact that we're here. So we are here. This is how we got to think. Let's think like this so that hopefully these moves work and in 3 years we don't have to be thinking like this anymore.
Yeah. Oh. And you know what? He's a United Academy graduate.
Right, exactly.
He's
So,
from the area. Yeah. I don't know. I
he's
just
from our academy.
My friend who's a Chelsea fan, I made the joke that Leicester or Chelsea spent the 30 to 40 million on drink water because they felt so bad that they robbed them of Kante for only 30 million.
Right.
All right, Polly, thanks for joining me. This has been a great conversation.
So much for having me.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll finally get that roundtable podcast going. Nathan was supposed to join us today, but he had work come up. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks or so, we'll have some of these transfers that we can talk about. And all three of us can finally get on.
Yeah, hopefully. And looking forward to hopefully joining you again sometime soon.
All right. Thanks, Polly.
Thanks, Colin.